Welcome, Impactful Parents. It's time for the Impactful Parenting Podcast, where I give you parenting tips and resources to make you a more impactful parent to your school-aged child. I am your host, Christina Campos. Welcome, Impactful Parents. Today, we're going to be talking about socializing strategies for twice exceptional kids. Hello, my name is Christina Campos. I'm founder of the Impactful Parent, and I help parents of school-aged children who want to be one step ahead of their kids turn their chaos into connection with their adolescent. I'm a mom of four, a teacher that has taught every grade from preschool through high school. And today I help moms and dads like yourself to navigate the exhausting, confusing, frustrating, but rewarding world of parenting. So welcome to The Impactful Parent. And today I have a special guest. His name is Sam Young. And Sam is a two-time Fulbright scholar, a TEDx speaker, and the founder and director of Young Scholars Academy, which is a strength-based, talent-focused virtual enrichment school that supports twice exceptional and differently wired and gifted students to feel seen, nurtured, and happy as heck through strength-based courses, camps, and community. I'm excited to have Sam on today because we're going to be talking all about twice exceptional kids, and he's going to give us some strategies to empower our kiddos to socialize successfully and the tools that parents need to support their children in a new digital age where socialization looks a lot different than when we grew up. So let's get started, Sam. I'm glad that you're here.
Christina, thanks so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
We have to start off with what is twice exceptional? And before you answer that, I also want to preface this by saying, if you're a parent that's listening to this and you don't know if your child is twice exceptional, but maybe you just know that they are somewhat socially awkward, would today's episode be valuable to them also?
Yeah, this talk is really, and as you said, before we go into definitions, we're talking about students who are differently wired. Right. So if you have a kiddo who you know has a brain that sort of functions differently than what schools or others might be, maybe you're looking at other families and can't help but compare and so forth. If you have a kiddo who you know has areas where they're strong and areas where they're struggling, this talk is for you.
And what is twice exceptional specifically?
So twice exceptional refers to students who have, or people who have, dual exceptionalities. The idea here being, if you and people who are watching the video, think of like a bell curve, and people who are listening, you have to just close your eyes and try to picture this. But think of someone who has a foot kind of firmly planted on either end of the bell curve. Normally we think of people as being learning disabled or learning differenced or gifted. And the idea behind twice exceptionality is that they're both simultaneously. It's someone who might have a high IQ and be incredibly bright or brilliant or talented in certain areas. That could be as an artist, as a gymnast, intellectually, as an academic, and then simultaneously has struggle areas. They could have autism, ADHD, dyslexia, dysgraphia. And it's the coexistence of these two exceptionalities, which is where the name comes from.
I love that definition. I obviously knew what twice exceptional is, being a parenting coach, a teacher, and having twice exceptional kids myself. And that's one thing I want to put out there right away. If you're a parent who's listening to this and you're not familiar with twice exceptional kids, it is so common, so, so common. And we just don't really talk about it. And I did a lot of my educational teaching in gifted schools, and so many very, very gifted and talented children are twice exceptional. It's like this balancing game that Mother Nature tends to do. You get really, really strong gifts in this, but then you have this other area that's just a lot more challenging, and that just happens all the time. So I just want to make parents aware, like, this is something that your child might even have and you don't even know it. Now, why do these type of children have some socialization struggles?
Well, a big part of it is expectations, right? So you have these brains that are developing quite differently. So you have an 11-year-old who's not interested in what other 11-year-olds are. She's got the emotional intelligence, perhaps, of a 5 to 7-year-old, but intellectually, she's like 25. And it's really difficult when we talk about like socializing and connecting. How do you deal with that? How do you deal with someone who's wrestling with the weight of climate change and intellectually understands it, but then doesn't have the emotional ability or strategies or coping mechanisms to process that? And so these kids struggle to socialize. They're not like their similarly aged peers.
So I'd like to think of signs that if you're listening to this as a parent and you're wondering if this episode is really for you, what are some things that are just quick, you know, oh, that's my kid. Maybe they are twice exceptional.
If you have a kiddo who you feel like is a square peg in a round hole, like they're really bright, they have talents and interests and strengths, and they go way deeper or have unique interests and curiosities that other kids their age probably aren't interested in, or they have a hard time shifting gears. Maybe they really burrow headfirst and quite deep into things. They're gorging on Wikipedia or like obsessed with going deeper than most people their age and YouTube, or they're consuming books. These are kids that are really curious, really creative, hungry to learn, and maybe missing other cues and things that are happening that similarly aged, quote unquote, neurotypical peers might be catching on. So this doesn't mean they're doing well in school. In fact, it might be the opposite. You might have a kiddo who you feel like is really bright and they're falling apart in school. Maybe they appear lazy because they probably have executive function struggles because of that brain development we were talking about. But I think a square peg in a round hole, a kid who's really unique and has strengths and talents and interests that may or may not be relevant in school, but they're not quite the same as their similarly aged peers.
And one of the cues that I saw quite a bit in my years of teaching was kids that don't identify and want to hang out with kids their age, but they love talking to adults.
Yes.
And they just, you know, they just gravitate to more of a mature conversation. Like that could be your kid. So yeah, these are all really great indicators. So let's get into the socialization part because yeah, these kids have a little bit of difficulty. You know, they don't want to dumb themselves down to their peers. A lot of times that's really frustrating for them. I also have a child that is twice exceptional that just is frankly very blunt. And it feels like he doesn't have a filter, but he just gets so, I want to say like somewhat annoyed with sometimes the intellect of his peers or what they're talking about. He just is like, that is so uninteresting. And then he just, yeah, you know, diarrhea of the mouth a little bit and bluntly mm-hmm. says something that I'm like, come on, don't be mean. It sounds kind of mean. And you have to coach him through that throughout the years to learn how to identify not to do that kind of stuff, because I don't want him to be stigmatized as being the weird kid or the kid that that is the mean kid, that it'll want him to act like a bully when really he's not trying to be mean. He's just somewhat impatient with some of his peers. So this is a real issue, and I'm excited to talk about it today because frankly, nobody really is. So let's get into your tips. What do you got for us?
The shift starts with us, right? I often joke that like these kinds of talks are like a bait and switch, you know, it's like 10 tips for socializing. And then it's like, parents, you need to make a change. But the reality is that we're not living in a time when we used to like ride our banana seat bikes together to the cul-de-sac. And you knew where everyone was because all 10 bikes were outside on someone's front yard. You know, our kids are socializing in different ways. And a big part of the first step is us accepting that. You know, I run a virtual school. We have 20 employees. We've never met in person, right? And our kids are doing that too. They might be meeting people in video games and they might be connecting. Take a moment and ask yourself, is your child meeting the needs and the things that you hope they are in a way in which you maybe weren't looking? In other words, is your child doing the things that you want them to do in an arena that you maybe didn't expect? Are they meeting their social needs in Minecraft? Are they on Discord? Are they socializing in spaces that you didn't otherwise look because you have an idea? So they may very well already be doing it. And my first tip there is just be curious.
I love that. And you're absolutely right. The socialization today is completely different than when we grew up. And that's very hard for Gen Xers to really wrap our head around because we didn't grow up with all of our friends right in our back pocket, you know? And that phone, that device, we are always like, get off the screen, get off the screen. But when you ask a kid to get off the screen, you're also telling them to put their friends away. And so it's like, well, we have to realize that as a parent, that what we're doing, you know, and to give, and maybe I think the word I'm looking for is help them achieve some balance in what's happening. But I love that first step because, yeah, they're socializing in video games. They're socializing on apps. They're socializing, yes, in person and in classes, but it's not the same anymore. And we cannot pretend that it is or force them into this other way when socialization takes two or more to tango. And if their friend can't come over, then their socialization has to be online somehow.
Another one I think that's really, really, really important is strength-based, right? When we talk about socializing, whether you're trying to curate something for your kiddo or whether you are looking for opportunities or just looking at what they're currently doing, can you play to their strengths and interests? There might be things that are going on. When we talk about twice exceptional kids and neurodivergent kids, there's a concept called overexcitabilities. And the basic premise of this is that our students are going to be sensitive to certain things that we may not otherwise be aware of. I have students that wear, aircraft grade headphones in classes because things feel so loud or the fabric of their clothes feels suffocating. So can you find an environment that is both going to be appealing to their strengths and interests and also appealing to their comfort levels and their preferences? And if you haven't had this conversation, this is a great place, parents, to introduce that kind of introspection, right? Maybe a little sharing and reflecting. What are times that have worked out well? It didn't go so well when I dropped you off at Susan's birthday party and took off, right? Why? It was super loud, right? Whatever it might be. The lights were so bright, you know, and starting to think, interesting, has that bothered you before? Why do you think that is? What are some places where they don't have that? You know, if we can help involve our kids, they're bright. They don't need to be treated like little children, right? They intellectualize, they deserve to be involved in the process. And you'll find, again, when you let go of how we get there, what do you want your kid to do? You want them to be metacognitive, meta-effective, right? Reflecting on their thinking, reflecting on their feeling. If we can do that, whether it be, you know, journaling or having a conversation or sharing your own experiences. I have a hard time when I'm trying to do something in public because I'm so stressed out by the people, you know, whatever it might be, you're going to involve them and you're going to get some probably pretty great reflection at a pretty high level.
I think the mistake that a lot of parents make is they think that their kid wants to do what they have like in mind already. So for example, because that was not a very good way to put it, what I just said. For example, parents think, oh my gosh, we're going to go to this amusement park and we're going to have so much fun. And they don't tell the kid and they surprise them and they get there and it's the amusement park. And then they're like, why are they melting down when they're in reality just way overstimulated? And so you really do need to talk to your kid and figure out what kind of environment they need for the best socialization. Birthday parties may not be it. It might be one-on-one. Or maybe the amusement park is great, but maybe it's not. Really diving in and figuring that out is huge. And I think going back a little bit, there's some stigma I think parents sometimes have when they find that their kid is so sensitive, especially when we don't understand that. From this older generation, we're like, suck it up. Like, what the heck? Like, why? You don't want me to touch you? I want to give you a hug. I need to give you a hug. You know, I want to hug you. And they're like, no, I can't. You know, and you're like, what? This is stupid. I mean, literally, it's so frustrating as a parent when we don't get it. But we got to get over that. Like, you do. We just got to. It's us.
Totally.
We, as a parent, have the issue.
It's like the hugging grandma effect, right? The idea, like, you don't want to hug grandma. Why? You know, why? I'm just curious. You know, she's got whiskers or, you know, or like the perfume she wears or, and unpacking it. And as you say, Christina, we have to let go. It's all about control. And we're when we're trying to curate these experiences, we're going to Disney, damn it. It's going to be the best day. You know, that's control. We're forcing our idea on our kids. And I think giving them more agency and giving them more control and also having some compromise, but figuring out what are our non-negotiables and things like that. A great strategy that is like a finger vote, you know, like you have out of five, how much do you want to do this thing? And then you can go around the house and say like, I'm a two, I'm a one. And then anything that's like three and up, you keep on the table. And then we can decide, you know, what might work well, or we can kind of unpack why something's below a three or something like that.
I love that finger strategy. I've never heard that before. Similar things I've heard, but not that one specifically. And it's just another way that parents are able to be curious about their child without feeling like they're asking a million questions. So that's a great strategy.
Don't be afraid to curate. I think a lot of parents, it's a hard thing, right? You know, don't want to be a helicopter parent. I don't want to do too much. What's too much? My kid doesn't seem motivated to want to go socialize. And again, if you can involve them in the process, can you find out what they're interested in? Most of Twice Exceptional Kids' social lives are often most comfortable when they're curated because there's some kind of role, right? I give the example of Dungeons and Dragons, one of our most popular classes. Socializing is amorphous. It's ambiguous. It can be really difficult and scary getting dropped off at the birthday, right? But Dungeons and Dragons, I have a role. I'm the dungeon master, or I play this. This is my avatar. And so being able to kind of curate, being a little bit more involved, setting up a play date with a like-minded kiddo, or organizing an event with a mentor, things like that. We might want our kids to want to do these things, and they probably do, but this is a whole other talk. But those executive function skills sometimes get in the way of like, I want to socialize, I desire relationships, but I have a hard time reaching out and thinking ahead. What I mean by that is that, again, some parents will sit back. If you're a 12-year-old, right, and you have a neurodivergent kid and your friends have neurotypical kids, and they're begging for things, right? I want to go to the arcade this weekend, and right, they're looking ahead and they're doing some of these things, whereas our kids might not be. They might be totally engrossed in what they're doing. So what I'm saying is involving them in the process and then doing the legwork, because they can't do it themselves yet. And they'll feel most comfortable when they're involved, and often when they have a role and it's not ambiguous, like you're going to a birthday, but you are a dungeon master or an improv person or whatever it might be.
What else do you have for us?
So one of the things that I love to share with a lot of our kids, especially many of our autistic students who struggle with maybe reading cues and cueing themselves, is this IFR rule is a great one. So I help kids think about, what's a good ratio? Maybe they feel like they talk too much. Maybe they feel like they don't get to talk enough. So IFR is inquire. So if I ask you, Christina, about your weekend, I follow up. Oh, that's interesting that you built this fireplace. Is it propane or is it gas or is it wood? And then I relate. That's interesting. I actually went once and I wanted to build a fireplace and it turns out I bought the wrong kind, whatever. So if I can IFR, it got a good ratio of two things focused on you. And then it gives me an inroad to talk about myself, and we're connecting. And a lot of our kids, again, they might just feel like they're, like you said before, they're blurting out things or they're interrupting people. And it's because they're so excited to talk about what they're talking about and they feel such deep passion.
Those were awesome, amazing tips. Now, I don't want the parents to miss what you just said, because those are some concrete things that we can now take with us and implement today. So IFR, and that standard for?
That's inquire, follow up, and relate. It also helps our kids, right? So they're actually building meaningful relationships with others, because 66% of the conversation is on the other person. Am I talking about others enough and expressing interest in others? And also, am I giving room for myself? Because we know we have these students that are sweet as can be, and they get totally taken advantage of because they don't get to talk about themselves much because they're such good listeners, or they're so interested or so desperate to connect. And so this is a great way, because they may not pick up on social cues. Another thing I didn't mention is thinking about the times of year and thinking about our sort of biological clocks, right? Like, well, it's the beginning of a new experience. School's just started. There's a narrow window to connect with people. And a lot of the times our kids don't realize that. So all of a sudden they've just kind of picked their head up and it's November and cliques and things have formed, right? So bringing awareness to human behavior and trends and things, when our kids can intellectualize that, hey, we're kind of like hibernating creatures, especially if you live in a cold place, right? So come wintertime, you can have a hard time meeting people. So in the beginning of the year, even if it feels a little bit foreign or uncomfortable, let's push a little bit harder and try to find more opportunities. Because it's sort of like planting seeds. We can always come back and water them a little bit later, but that season to harvest our seeds is is ending soon, right? So I think that bringing that kind of awareness, having little ratios like inquire, follow up, relate, sometimes called the 3-to-1 rule, but just expressing interest and then being able to talk about ourselves. That's a really big one.
What else do you have for us?
The friction rule, just the idea is, if you have a kiddo, especially a child who's introverted, who has a really hard time maybe connecting and being around people, how can you reduce friction as much as possible? And another thing that I like to say, for students who struggle to socialize, you and I talking to each other might be really uncomfortable. It might be too personal. I don't know you, etc. And so I like to say, like, how can we talk side by side? So what's something that we can do where we have a shared experience? Maybe we look at the art on your wall. And now I'm not talking to you, Christina, about Christina, and you're not interviewing me, Sam, about Sam. We're talking about a thing. What's the place that's going to be best for that? Probably an art gallery or maybe a concert or a movie, right? Where it's not like you and I locked into a 90-minute dinner together. That's really scary. But we're walking around and we're exploring things together, and we now have reduced friction. It's an easy social experience. And the number one way to do this is any kind of group curated enrichment learning, right? So if you have a child who's really interested in Minecraft, find a Minecraft club or course, right? It's instant. You take these kids, and especially like the more quirky and brilliant and bright and curious they are, the more niche their stuff might be, right? Can you find a car enthusiast, mountain bike, engineering, you know, whatever it might be, space where, again, you've curated, you've surrounded these kids with a bunch of their peers, you're reducing friction. Even things like peacocking a little bit, right? We have kids that have a hard time maybe connecting with others, maybe wearing really loud socks, you know, or wearing like their favorite band shirt or something. Like, I went to a networking event, a luncheon before that. I wore my favorite Hawaiian shirt. Everybody came up to me. Great shirt. You're ready for summer. It works, right? I just like doing something that's kind of branding myself and helping our kids to build confidence by doing something that might be loud, that might make a ripple, that might allow other people to approach them with less friction. If Christina, you love sci-fi books, perhaps the difference between you reading in your bedroom and reading in a Starbucks could be someone bumping into you saying, oh my God, I love Philip Dick or whoever you're reading, right? And then all of a sudden, you haven't actually socialized, someone's come to you. And what's changed? You've just done what you do in public. Right. So I think a lot of the times, how can we reduce friction so that we can make our kids' experiences much more successful?
The common theme I hear in everything that you're saying is that parents are absolutely hands-on, like really the magic happening. Like, I think too many times we sit back and think that this should just be natural for kids to go out and make friends and socialize and, you know, figure stuff out. And we really need to get in there and help our kids socialize sometimes, especially these twice exceptional kids or autistic kids that just, it may not just come so naturally. And it's okay for us to get in there and be a guide, be a coach in this area. So I just hear this theme as you're talking over and over, and I just want to reiterate, parents, you got to get in there.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, but you have to check yourself, right? You need to leave your baggage at the door before you jump in. And you need to say, am I projecting and making the kid do what I think they should do? Or am I genuinely a curious detective? I say be a detective, not a lawyer, right? Like, you want to sit on the sideline, pay attention, look for clues, tap into strengths, and then curate. And yes, absolutely. When we talk about that prefrontal cortex, that part that's arranging play dates and, you know, response inhibition and working memory and all these things, you know, with neurodivergent kids, that's not developing until 27 to 30 years old, right? So it's a little bit bananas on our end to be like, why aren't you making play dates and socializing? And, you know, aren't you gathering? I have a student that's been with us for 4 years, and he always has a really hard time socializing. I was like, well, what's a really good thing that you like to do? He loves board games. I was like, what if we just elevated your status and you create a board game club? And then people come to you because you're having a hard time approaching people. But if you create a club and you're doing what you love and you just show up consistently, people will come out. And we've made a whole project about it, and it's super exciting. The idea is someone's involved, adults are involved helping, but it's the kid's dream, right? And we're just making sure that it comes true and baking in all the executive function support along the way versus go play hockey because I played hockey and your grandfather played hockey. You know, that's a very different kind of involvement.
Yeah, thank you for that distinction because that's completely different.
Yeah. But you're absolutely right. We must be just as someone with a physical difference in a wheelchair or someone who's visually impaired would need a walking cane. So too do our students need accommodations, and we struggle to support them sometimes because we don't see their differences.
This isn't something that parents have to do forever. A lot of times we just have to be the first little push in teaching them how to do this. Once they realize that, oh, if I start the club and the people can come to me, they've learned that skill now. And we don't, that at that point, we can step back as parents. I think sometimes when we get involved in parent and as parents, we just feel like, oh, this is going to be forever. I'm going to be doing this forever. You're not going to be doing this forever. You're teaching them how to fish instead of fishing for them, right? That old
Exactly.
saying that you got to teach somebody how to fish so they can survive for themselves. And that's what we're doing here.
Exactly right. And in the How to Win Friends and Influence People book, Dale Carnegie uses a great metaphor building on that example. And he says, when we're fishing, we must fish with what the fish wants to eat, which is a worm, not what we want to eat, which might be apple pie, right? And so the idea is that you're queuing up your kids' interests and strengths, no matter how gross you think they might be, or whatever, because you're creating an environment for the fishermen and the fish, and you are no longer the fisherman, right? You are just structuring and mentoring and fading away. So what we think works, what we think tastes good, what we think is the right thing to do is not necessarily their truth, and we need to support, but also leave space.
Now that segues so perfectly into how you teach these kids how to fish. Your business, I would love to hear more about it. What do you do? How do you help kids?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we have a virtual enrichment school. We call ourselves a full wraparound village. It's a virtual village. We offer strength-based courses. We have courses that run from 8 to 40 weeks, and then we also have summer camps. If anyone's listening now, we're actually open for enrollment. Right now, we open a couple times a year. We offer things like, my whole vision was, if you think of your typical atypical kid, they start learning at the end of the school day, right? Like they go through school because they have to. And then they come home and they research things they care about. And so I thought, well, in my experience, the coolest learning happened in college. So why don't we just take like university level content down to these young bodies because they crave it. So we have, philosophy for 5-year-olds. We have video game design and Unity coding for 10-year-olds. We have speech and debate and robotics and improv and Dungeons and Dragons and Pokemon and anime history and all kinds of classes, over 40 different classes, as well as more academic stuff. We have AP courses and executive function courses and adulting, like I mentioned previously. And so the whole vision is this: it's that you have neurodivergent kids from all over the world coming together, learning content that they crave, with mentors who get them and can help them self-actualize, and with kids who become their friends. And I mentioned this before, we had an open house this week, and one of our girls, named Emmy, she's 11, she said probably the most beautiful, perfect thing, which also made me melt down and just break down and cry, not melt down, sorry, break down and cry. And she said, I felt like a unicorn my whole life who had to pretend to be a horse. And now I'm in a herd full of unicorns like myself. And another boy said, this is the only place where I feel like I belong. And even though it's on Zoom, I feel like I'm there in person.
What a self-esteem boost for these children to find their tribe. I mean, to find people like them. I mean, that's what, when I was in gifted education, that's what gifted schools did. And unfortunately, not every gifted kid can afford to go to a gifted school. And that hurts my heart because when you walk into those schools, those kids, they found their people. Like, this is a
Totally.
whole school of my people. And that's what you created online, which is fantastic. Can you tell me what are the age groups for, like, where do you start and where do you end
Yeah,
in
so we
age?
have, and you're exactly right. And I'll just say quickly, we have kids who, we have these homeroom social clubs. So when you enroll in 2 classes, you get a third one for free, which is like a brick and mortar school has a homeroom. We have one, but it's all fun. It's like sharing your passions, and it's like student presentations and games. And we had a girl who one kid said he was autistic. And she's like, wait, I'm autistic. And all the, you know, 5 out of 6 kids are autistic. And this is something like these kids are bragging about all of a sudden, right? So they're like, they really belong. So it's really magical. Obviously I'm biased, but there's hundreds of people who agree. But to answer your question, we serve 5 to 18-year-olds. So okay. It's kinder through the end of high school.
Tell us a little bit more, like, what is open for enrollment right now if people are listening and want to take action?
Yes. So there's the way that this works. We have 5 8-week, this is your math here, 40 weeks. There's 5 8-week semesters. So we have fall one and fall two. And then in the middle of the year, there's winter. And then there's spring one and spring two. And so right now we're at the very last semester of the year. This next week, the enrollment closes. And then on April the 29th, we'll start our last 8-week stretch of courses. So these courses are meeting during the day and after school. So for homeschoolers and public and private schoolers. And they're meeting from the end of April to the end of June. And again, families can take as many courses as they want. This is really special because the courses during the year offer a tremendous amount of community. It's 8 weeks of being with the same kids. The kids have inside jokes. They travel course to course to course with them. And then at the end of June, we go into summer camp mode where we have 5-day summer camps. They're an hour each and you can stack them. So for example, we plan them based on kind of like a student's avatar interest, right? Like, so if you, Jessica, are really interested in science, there'll be like, you know, in the morning you can take robotics. And then after there will be chemistry or anatomy or, you know, hands-on engineering or something, so that you can take a 4-hour a day load of 4 different 1-hour camps, or you can take like one.
If parents are interested in joining your courses, what are some of the requirements they need to meet?
So we often say that if you're here, you're meant to be here, right? You don't have to have a formal diagnosis. You don't have to have seen a neuropsychologist. If you know that you have a kiddo who is asynchronous, who has great strengths and great struggles, and they have unique interests, and there is something that we offer that interests them that you feel like would help them thrive, then we are right for you. And we recommend you come check it out. If for whatever reason, it's not a good fit, then we can always discuss. But we are here to serve, and what we're doing works for everyone. It just works especially well for differently wired kids.
And if people are resonating with what you're saying, where can they find you? Where do we go to sign up for these classes?
Yes, no. So no matter what time of year, if you just go to youngscholarsacademy.org, youngscholarsacademy.org.
Well, thank you again, Sam. I really appreciate you coming on and teaching us so much about Twice Exceptional Kids and your academy. I hope that everybody goes. One last time, where is the website's name?
And youngscholarsacademy.org. So young scholars, plural with an S, academy.org.
Thank you for joining me today. Remember that this episode is just a small part of what the Impactful Parent offers. Also available are online courses, parent support groups, coaching services, and the Impactful Parent app. Find out more by going to theimpactfulparent.com. And begin your Impactful Parent journey by downloading the Impactful Parent app. The Impactful Parent app is free, so you can carry help, tips, and parenting resources right in your pocket and discover new techniques to make your parenting more effective. And get parenting resources that are just going to make your life easier. Download the app today. You got nothing to lose because it's free. So go to theimpactfulparent.com or your phone's app store and search Impactful Parent so that you can discover how to step up your parenting game and become a more impactful parent. But until next time, you got this. I'm just here to help.
Thank you for listening today. Remember to subscribe and share this podcast with a friend. And don't forget, the Impactful Parenting Podcast is an extension of the Impactful Parent community. Go to the Impactful Parent website and download the free Impactful Parent app so you don't miss a parenting tip that can help you and your family. Thanks for listening today. So go to theimpactfulparent.com and see you next episode.